It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Not as bad as they thought.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the Morning Open, a look at the broader economy as trading gets underway for the day. Less than a half an hour into it, so we ask the question, where's Wall Street? The S&P up about 1.25%. Same for the NASDAQ. The Dow up about 1%, 96 points at 10,366. Asian shares ended the day higher, and European markets are up right now about 1%. Gold zooming like a rocket today, another record high. General Motors reported today it's hemorrhaging less money than many people had thought, which may be a good sign for U.S. taxpayers who've had a lot of money, billions of dollars, doled out to the automaker. They may be getting some of it back soon. Let's check in with Marketplace Automotive correspondent Elisa Roth, who's with us live in our New York bureau. Hi, Elisa.
Hello.
So how does losing $1.2 billion turn into such good news?
Okay, well, $1.2 billion is obviously a lot of money, but it is less than GM has lost recently, and it's a lot better than GM had predicted it would be doing at this point. So the company's actually feeling pretty confident.
So does that mean it's ready to repay that loan early?
Yes. You'll recall that GM owes the government $6.7 billion, and it says it's ready to make the first payment on that loan next month. So this new plan actually has GM paying off the entire loan by 2011, which is 4 years earlier than it has to. The CEO, Fritz Henderson, was talking about paying off the loan at the at a press conference this morning. This is what he said.
We certainly felt, given our liquidity position, that we were able to do it, and we're committed to do this. We have to begin the process. It's a personal commitment. It's a commitment of the entire leadership team of the company to repay the taxpayer, first and foremost from repaying the loan, and then over time generating value in the shares so that the taxpayers benefit as major shareholders of the company.
Now, Elisa, he mentioned shareholders and taxpayers there at the end. I mean, is GM talking about going public anytime soon?
The original plan was to go public sometime toward the end of next year. Last week, the chairman of the board said it's way too early to be saying, you know, we're going public at this point. And Henderson pretty much reiterated that today.
All right. Marketplace's Elisa Roth in New York. Elisa, thanks.
You're welcome.
We got retail sales numbers this morning. They rose more than expected, 1.4% in October. A lot of it was auto sales. And if you take those out, demand barely nudged the needle. Sam Stovall is Chief Investment Strategist at S&P Equity Research. He's in New York and live with us on the line. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Steve.
So let's take out these cash for clunker auto sales numbers. The numbers are still pretty decent. I mean, they say the economy is able to stand on its own.
That's right. The analogy that I use is that the Treasury, the Fed, has been spraying an awful lot of lighter fluid onto these charcoal briquettes and hoping that they'll be able to remain ignited on their own, that the consumer will be able to go out and spend even without the cash for clunkers. So it is a bit encouraging that retail sales were much higher in October over September. But let's not get too optimistic, because remember, on a year-over-year basis, meaning versus October in 2008, we're still down 2.6% if you exclude autos.
Yeah, I got to ask, Sam, I mean, 10% unemployment, what do these numbers tell us about the health of the American consumer?
Well, that they're still out there. They would like to spend, but I think their own debt levels are sort of forcing them not to spend as much as they would like to. Also, they haven't been all that good in terms of increasing their savings rate either. It's a lot better than the less than 1% that we saw 2 years ago, but at only 3%, you know, that's less than about half of what we thought it would be.
All right. Sam Stovall from New York. Sam, thanks.
You're welcome.
Listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Monday, November 16th, 2009, at marketplace.org. New study is raising more questions about Merck's cholesterol drugs. The results were presented yesterday at the annual meeting of the American Heart Association. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports.
The study compared Merck drug Zetia to another drug, Niaspan. It's made by rival Abbott Laboratories, and Abbott sponsored the study. Researchers found that Zetia didn't shrink the plaque in some arteries as much as Niaspan did. Zetia users may have also suffered more heart attacks. That may not exactly prompt you to
ask your doctor if Zetia is right for you.
And it may make you more likely to ask for Niaspan. Analyst Les Funtleiter of Miller Tabak says that's exactly what the study was designed to do.
It sort of is a marketing study. You want to prove your drug is better than the other drug.
Trouble is, this is yet another in a string of unfavorable results for Zetia. Prescription rates of the drug have already fallen more than 20%.
The question is, how much worse it gets?
Experts also say the study is too small to draw firm conclusions. Larger studies are in the works, but the results won't be known for several years. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
World leaders are gathering in Rome today for a United Nations summit on food security. The UN's Food and Agriculture Organization is hoping to tackle some of the problems that led to the food crisis last year. That's when agricultural commodities such as rice and wheat and corn and soybean hit record high prices and triggered food riots in some parts of the world. But this year, as Christopher Worth reports, international food aid agencies aren't so hopeful.
The economic crisis has helped to knock down food prices from their highs last year. But many agricultural experts now warn that a second food crisis could follow as the global economy begins to recover. Gwen Kripke is with Oxfam International. He says the fundamentals that led to the first food crisis, such as increased demand in Asia and a lack of agricultural investment overall, haven't changed since 2008.
We haven't changed our agricultural practices. We haven't changed how much food we consume. And in fact, we've probably made things worse because many governments are instituting higher mandates for biofuels.
Going into this week's meeting, UN leaders had been hoping to secure a pledge of $44 billion in agricultural aid. But so far, Kripke says, no clear commitments on funding have been made. According to the UN, there are 1 billion hungry people in the world. I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
President Obama arrived in China last night. A lot is on his mind. Climate change, the global economic recovery, North Korea, and as is often the case, the value of the Chinese currency. Many consider it undervalued, and the White House has said as much. China, though, it's had enough of this. Thank you very much, or little. Here's Marketplace's Scott Tong from Shanghai.
Calls for China to boost its currency are not fair, so says a spokesman for the Chinese Ministry of Commerce. Beijing pegs its exchange rate to the dollar, which is falling. So according to the spokesperson, if China raised its currency, it'd be unfair. That would make Chinese goods more expensive in American stores and hurt Chinese exporters. UCLA economist Calla Weimer.
The danger of an exchange rate adjustment is that it slows down China's economic growth. And that doesn't do much good for the rest of the world.
But the IMF today said it considers the Chinese currency significantly undervalued. And it argued in Beijing that a stronger currency is necessary. That would help Chinese consumers buying imports and boost domestic demand in China. And the world needs Chinese shoppers to help replace anemic American shoppers. Patrick Bennett is a currency strategist at Societe Generale.
You know, on any reasonable metric, the currency is undervalued. The prospect for it to rise is very much the consensus opinion.
Critics want the rise sooner rather than later, though it could be months, even a year away. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
We've heard a lot about Wall Street firms doling out billions of dollars in bonuses this year after getting hundreds of billions in taxpayer bailouts. Well, those same firms are also spending heavily to lobby Congress against sweeping financial reforms. Union activists and their allies will be protesting that today. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has more.
5,000 people rallied against bailouts and foreclosures and lax financial regulation at the American Bankers Convention in Chicago last month. It'll be much the same today at Goldman Sachs in Washington. Stephen Lerner of the Service Employees International Union says taxpayers saved Wall Street. Now Wall Street's trying to protect its profits.
We bailed them out, and now they're using that money to oppose the changes in the law that would protect us from a future economic calamity.
Labor and taxpayer groups want tough reforms from Congress, a new consumer protection agency, limits on bank size, more oversight of risky investments. Financial companies are trying to slow the rush to regulation, but, says Sheila Krumholtz of the Center for Responsive Politics,
they know that reform is coming, like it or not.
So industry lobbyists are trying to water it down.
To do as little damage as possible to their bottom lines.
And they do have plenty of weight to throw around. According to a report out today from Public Citizen, financial companies gave $42 million to political candidates over the past year. Top recipients were lawmakers crafting new regulations for the industry. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Thanksgiving's next week, and Fortune magazine's Alan Sloan is sizing up some turkeys of the economic kind. Those business dealings have turned out to be, in his opinion, economic failures. Topping his list, cash for clunkers. He's with us now to talk about that and other things. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Steve.
All right, cash for clunkers. I mean, I thought, Alan, this brought people into the dealerships. I mean, got them buying when they had no incentive to do so before. Are you saying it's a dud?
Yeah, because even though it did, in fact, increase sales while the program was on, it's decreased sales that would be happening now. Also, the used car market lost a whole lot of low-end used cars, which increases the price to the people who shop in that market, who are the lower-income people, who are the people we're trying to help.
All right. Next turkey is Citibank and Phibro. I mean, if the U.S. government, i.e. the American taxpayer, owns 34% of Citi, right? These are bankers. Why didn't they know better?
They sold Phibro energy trading business for $1 billion under pressure from the government, and they could have easily gotten $1.5 billion, probably more, if they had been able to sell it freely instead of under the gun. And the reason they sold it, as I'm sure you remember, is that they were going to have to pay some of the people there so much money under their contracts that it wouldn't have run afoul, you should forgive the expression, of the Paysar.
All right, next turkey is TARP, right, and these warrants.
Right. The government got a piece of the action when it made TARP loans to banks. But under the rules, banks have the right to buy back their piece of the action, which are known as stock purchase warrants, when they repay TARP. So most of the government's warrants got sold very, very early when the stocks of these banks was only starting to rise. And had they waited, we would have gotten a better price.
What about future turkeys? More or fewer turkeys in the future, Alan?
Always more turkeys. Always more turkeys. You look around and there's a ton of cheap money now in the world and some deals are starting to get done. The government is holding interest rates too low. It's trying to inflate the housing prices again. All of this is producing poults, which are baby turkeys, to those of us who didn't grow up on farms.
Yeah.
And I am sure that next year or the year after, we will have, in time for Thanksgiving, another whole new batch of turkeys.
Fortune magazine's Alan Sloan joining us this morning. Alan, thanks.
You're welcome, Steve.
And hey, share your thoughts with us online at our website, marketplace.org. Our online host and blogger, Scott Jago, is there at our website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.